Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello, and welcome back to the Grief Gang podcast with me, your host, Amber Jeffrey. The message behind the Grief Gang is to normalise the topic of conversation that is grief. People living with grief can often feel ashamed, isolated, and alone. This podcast was created to break those taboos after I, myself, experienced all of those feelings after the loss of my mum in 2016. I decided enough was enough and we need to talk about this. You'll hear on this podcast an array of stories and experiences, some being my own and some being fantastic guest episodes and their incredible stories. You'll laugh, you'll cry, but I hope above all, I hope you'll learn. I hope you'll learn that you are not alone in your grief journey, that you have a voice and it should be heard, that you and your grief matter. So without further ado, I'll let you enjoy the episode. Happy listening. Hi guys, and welcome back to the Grief Gang podcast with me, your host, Amber Jeffrey. This week I am joined by a fantastic woman who I discovered on Instagram about a month and a bit ago or so. And I'm so happy that I have, because this has been a topic that I have wanted to discuss for so long. And I feel like there is no one better to be sat here today with to do so. So without further ado, I would like to introduce Louisa.
Hello.
Hi. How are you feeling?
I'm okay, thank you. Yeah, I'm a bit nervous. Yeah. But I'm okay.
Am I your first podcast?
Yeah, you are.
Yes. Love that. Well, I hope you're feeling comfortable. So let's get into it. So, Louisa, if you wouldn't mind introducing yourself to the listeners, who you are, age, what you do for a living, and who we are here to remember today.
Okay, so I'm Louisa. I just turned 35 yesterday. And at the moment, I'm on maternity leave, actually. But normally, I am a senior buyer for Cult Beauty, which is a beauty website which I love and adore, based in London. But it's a global business. So before this, I travelled a lot, obviously before lockdown, kind of finding all the best beauty products all over the world.
Yeah.
It's a dream job, to be honest.
Buddy, yeah, fresh turned back, guys. Continue.
And then I guess what we're here to talk about today is my daughter, August, who... was born on the 8th of June this year, during lockdown. And she was unfortunately and unexpectedly stillborn, which kind of has completely rocked our world, I guess.
Yep.
I was had a really healthy pregnancy, actually. Everything was really good. Obviously, I had sickness and stuff in the beginning, as you do. But every scan, everything was perfect. She was growing perfectly. And then I was overdue, so I got to 41 weeks and one day, and suddenly the contractions started kicking in. So we were really excited, and I was bouncing on that ball. And to be honest, the contractions were horrendous. They were so painful. I don't know if that's normal or because, you know, my case was
of course
quite different. But so went into hospital. They looked me over, got sent home. I wasn't ready. Went home for a bit, bounced on the ball a bit. And by the afternoon, I'd been contracting for like over 12 hours and I just couldn't take the pain anymore. I hadn't slept at all. My partner hadn't slept at all. So we rang the hospital and went back in and they checked me over and everything was fine. They sent Liam away because of COVID. Obviously, he couldn't come in with me. So I was in such a state of pain. I just needed some pain relief. So I was in there for about an hour. And because of COVID, the whole thing was like a ghost town, actually. It was really weird. But the nurses kept coming in and out and getting things checked off. And they said, oh, we can open the ward for you upstairs. There's nobody here. So you can have the rushy ward at the Royal Barks. Okay. And we're going to give you some morphine. So just to let you sleep for a few hours because you're not ready to push yet. But you're obviously in a lot of pain. So I was like, okay, great. So they checked the baby's heartbeat. They checked my heartbeat. Everything was fine. Everything was really healthy and normal. And then I said to them, oh, by the way, I think my water's broke on the way to the hospital. And she had a quick look and she said, oh, no, I don't think so. I can't see anything. Yeah. And I was like, well, okay, that's strange. I did feel like a rush of water. And when you're like 34, you kind of know your body.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, they dismissed that. So I was like, oh, okay, fine.
You think you're the professional. Yeah, so you know.
Exactly. So they took me upstairs to the ward, opened the whole ward for me, put me on a bed, gave me morphine injection, and then I drifted off to sleep, thank goodness, for about 45 minutes. They came in to check me about 45 minutes later. By this time, I'd text Liam and said, just go home and get some rest because I'm going to try and rest for 4 hours and I'll call you when I'm a bit closer because at that time, they were only letting partners in when you were actively pushing.
Yes, yeah.
You had to do everything else by yourself. So 45 minutes later, the nurse came to check on me, took my heartbeat, took the baby's heartbeat, and it was a student nurse, and she couldn't seem to get the Doppler to work. And she was doing it and doing it and doing it, and I was so out of it, to be honest. I was like, whatever, it's fine, just do your thing. And they really, really couldn't get it to work, and it was beginning to get a bit more frantic, and I guess I was so high on the pain relief that I was like really drowsy and didn't really know what was going on. Anyway, they bundled me in a wheelchair. And they said, oh, we're just going to take you downstairs, just to give you a quick scan. So I was like, okay, cool. So they bundled me in a wheelchair, went downstairs, and then they called the consultant in and he started to scan me. And he said, oh, you know, because your baby's so big, because you're overdue, it's hard to find where the heart is. I was like, okay. And then the midwife said to me, why don't you phone Liam now to come in? And I said, oh, really?
Yeah, soon.
He can come?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, that's good.
Yeah.
And as I phoned him, I was like, oh, you can come in now. And he was like, oh. And then he said, you know, is everything okay? And I said, yeah, I think so. They're just scanning me at the moment. And I put the phone down and he was on his way in. And then they went and got another. They started to get really frantic in the room. And they said,
making you nervous.
We need to go and get this other lady who was like the top consultant.
Yeah.
And sonographer, I think. So she came and she started scanning. And then the whole room just went quiet and they turned the screen to me and they just said, Louise, I'm afraid we've got bad news. Your baby's died. And my heart literally, I can't even, going back to that moment, it is just, I can't even explain how I felt because I felt like this isn't even real. I was so like drowsy on the pain relief. Then to be told that, I was like, no, that
they've not got that right.
That's wrong because 45 minutes ago, she was fine. And I just started screaming and crying. And my first thought was, Liam's on his way here thinking that I'm
going
into labour. And when he gets into this room, I've got to tell him that the baby's died. And it was so awful.
It's okay. Take your time. It's okay.
So obviously
my
first...
To go through that alone.
I know. Obviously my first thought is, oh, I shouldn't have took that pain relief. Because she died after that. And so you begin to question everything.
What have I done? You look to yourself.
And I said, oh, I took an antihistamine yesterday. I took some paracetamol earlier.
I just want an answer.
And I said, what have I done? And they were like, Louisa, this is nothing you've done. We don't know why it's happened. And I was like, how can you not know?
Yeah. Tell me you're not. Give me a reason.
Why has this happened? So, anyway.
Oh, I didn't put tissues on the table. I didn't realise. I'll get some in a minute.
That's all right. So then I had 20 minutes to wait for Liam to come, and that 20 minutes was literally the longest in my life.
Yeah.
I was starting to get really angry, and I was like shouting at the nurses, like, can you go and check if he's here?
Yeah.
Because I didn't want him to be waiting outside trying to get in.
Yeah.
And not getting in. And then eventually he came, and he just walked into the room and obviously saw I was crying, and the doctor said, I'm afraid, Liam, you know, we've got bad news that the baby's died.
Yeah.
And he was just like, that. How? Yeah. Like, that can't be real.
Yeah.
She was fine.
Yeah.
I left her and she was fine.
Yeah.
And we just, that moment was surreal.
Mm.
Like, they just left us alone for like a bit, and we just cried. And then, like, bless him, he, obviously I had to go and prepare to give birth. And I said to them, I said, such a stupid question, but I said, am I still going to have to give birth?
Yeah, still going to have to go through that.
My baby's died, and now what happens?
Mm.
And they just said, yes.
Because there's so many questions, isn't there? Obviously,
yeah.
It's something that, obviously, I can imagine in a pregnancy, you don't look up these things. You don't look,
no.
If the worst happens, what do I need to do?
You assume you get to 20 weeks and you're fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it is just, I think I was so numb. I just didn't really I couldn't really take in what was happening. It felt like a daze.
Mm-hmm.
So then Liam had to go and ring my parents, ring his parents. Obviously, because of Corona, nobody could come in.
Yeah.
And all this time, I had like 26 WhatsApps on my phone from people saying, any news?
Oh,
are you in labour?
Yeah.
And obviously, I just couldn't even look at my phone.
I
actually think I put it on airplane mode.
Yeah.
Just because I didn't want any more messages, and I just needed to like be away. And so yeah, Liam had to do that awful job of telling our families, which was just horrendous. And he had to go and tell his children. So he went and did that whilst I just rested.
Yeah.
And that was horrendous. And it's really confusing as well, because the baby had died, but the baby wasn't born.
Yeah.
And I'd gone into hospital, you know, they'd waved me off.
Yeah.
And here we are. And then basically I had to wait 12 hours until I could give birth. They gave me an epidural, which was pretty horrendous.
Yeah.
People just coming in and out of the room, kind of so many people. I think that was draining me in the hospital because this was a really big thing that had happened. It was like big news on the ward.
Yeah.
We literally had every consultant coming in to give them our condolences, and we're so sorry. And I know everyone meant so well and they were all so lovely to us. But at that point, I can't do small talk.
Nah, I'm not doing that.
I just don't want to talk to you. Like, please just leave me alone.
Yeah.
So anyway, I slept for about 12 hours, and then the next morning I was induced and obviously started pushing, and pushing a baby knowing that the baby is not going to be alive is just a different feeling. I was so worried about seeing her, holding her.
Did it almost did you feel like you weren't like not giving it your all, but you're a bit hesitant to keep pushing?
Yeah, at one point it was so painful, and I was about to throw up, and I just said, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
Is there another way to get this baby out? Because I can't do it. And to be honest, Liam got me through that. He just kept like helping me, and and then when she came, it was a really, really different experience, because when she was actually born, we suddenly felt really calm.
Yeah.
Because she was here and she was so gorgeous, and she was like the image of Liam, and she was really big. She was 7 pounds 11, so
near an eight.
She was really, you know, big and healthy, and she just looked so perfect. She just looked like she was sleeping. And then I guess it was a bit of a fuzz, but then we spent another night in hospital with her, and she was put in a cold cot so she could sleep with us.
Yeah.
And the Royal Berks is a special ward for bereaved parents where there's like a double bed and you have a tea and coffee machine and not that you even really care about eating drinking, you're just in a daze. But we went up there and I guess then we started to have to actually tell people because, like I said, I had all these messages on my phone, like, any news? Because everyone knew I was overdue. And, you know, going into hospital and stuff. And I just couldn't face, I didn't even know how to tell these people. It's just...
What do you begin writing? Like,
I know. And there's nowhere I could talk on the phone.
No.
Like, I couldn't even talk to my mum and dad on the phone.
Yeah.
I just couldn't. So we stayed with August and then we had a lot of decisions to make about the post-mortem and the hospital advised not to have a post-mortem, which we'll never quite understand.
Yeah.
I guess they think that it's, you know, very, I don't know, upsetting for you. I don't know. But we needed to know.
It's quite assuming of them for a parent, you know, your baby has just died.
You need to know
why. And
to
assume that. You don't want to know.
Yeah.
You don't want to know. And I presume they may think that of, obviously they don't want to, maybe to poke and prod baby.
Yeah, yeah.
But you need answers.
Yeah. So obviously it was a really difficult decision, but we decided to have a postmortem because we had to find out what had happened.
Of course.
And I think one of the hardest moments was when the midwives came in to take August away.
Yeah.
Because I knew where she was going.
Yeah.
And then we just had to go home.
Yeah.
And it really brought it back to me, actually, because obviously everything that happened with Chrissy Teigen and John Legend last week.
Yeah.
Chrissy Teigen tweeted, leaving the hospital, driving home from the hospital with no baby. How is this even real?
Yeah.
That is exactly.
And those are the things that I think people don't realise.
Then you're on maternity leave.
Yeah.
You go back to your house. You've got every baby thing under the sun. All the neighbours are expecting you to come back with a baby. And you just shut the curtains. And you just don't want to speak to anyone.
Yeah. I will never forget Elle from Feathering the Empty Nest. She, I think she wrote in her book, or I listened to her on a podcast years ago. And she was speaking about how when, obviously, those things... no one prepares you for, and she said the most like harrowing part was getting in the car and seeing that car seat.
It horrendous.
Like looking in the mirror.
Yeah, and seeing it there.
Seeing
empty.
That like such an injustice.
Liam was really amazing because he knew that that was going to be horrendous for me, and he drove home before we came home.
Yeah,
gave the car seat to our neighbour to hide.
It, yeah.
Hid all the stuff from me, shut the nursery door, the kids' rooms door, and just came back to a house that just kind of looked a bit more normal, I guess. But I knew everything was in there.
You've bought everything. You know where everything is. You know what you had in place.
Exactly. And I think the other thing that people forget when you lose a baby is when you come back from hospital, you've still just had a baby.
Your body is still
horrendous.
Producing.
Yeah. You're in so much pain. Everything's alien, you still look pregnant.
Yeah.
Like, it is a feeling like nothing else.
Yeah.
And then you just sit numb together. Like, I couldn't even focus on the TV. I'd put it on, but I couldn't look at it. And because everyone, I begin to tell people then, like, people are so lovely sending you lovely messages and stuff, but every time you look at your phone, it makes
Another
you
one.
Cry as well again. And then as people learned what was happening, people just start to send flowers and gifts and, you know, it's so lovely and people are so thoughtful. But every time the doorbell went, I would almost panic because it was like...
What is this now coming to me that is going to set me off, trigger me?
Cause
although it's not a thing of, like, you've forgotten, it's with you always, but what is this at my door that is now going
to... People's words are so lovely, but they just used to set me off.
It's the love, it's almost like... When the love of people is just so overwhelming, that the only expression is just to cry.
Exactly.
It's just to cry.
And I think our house at one point, we had like 25 bouquets.
Like a florist.
It was like a florist, and we were like putting them in buckets. We just didn't have enough vases.
Yeah.
So, I mean, people, like, the support we've had has been amazing, and I don't think we could have got through it without everyone around us, really. Yeah. But yeah, the first few weeks were the darkest because mm-hmm. you just think, how is this my life now? Yeah. When 3 days ago I was overdue and excited to have a baby, and now, like, you know, and you don't even want to go outside of your house because the neighbours, in case they ask you a question or, you know.
Yeah, don't want to put the bins out.
Yeah, just, like, you just literally want to shut the curtains and not.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't go food shopping for weeks, maybe even months.
Yeah.
People dropped off food. I wouldn't open the door. Mm-hmm. I just, yeah, like, it was the weirdest, darkest, most horrible time.
Yeah.
And then I guess paired on top of that was my ever-evolving guilt that maybe it was something I had done.
Yeah.
Because we had no answers.
Still no answers.
And nobody in the hospital would tell us anything. So we waited and we waited. And then August was obviously, she went to the John Radcliffe for her post-mortem. Mm-hmm. And then when she came back, we could actually go and see her. And we brought her home for a night to spend with us before we buried her, which was really special.
Yeah.
But it was never going to be enough. And it's not normal, is it, to... Mm-hmm. For that to be your special moment with your child.
Yeah.
So then we just kind of plodded on. Liam had to go back to work. And then I don't really know what I did for a long time. I think I went to my mum's most days.
Yeah.
I found it really hard to see people.
Mm-hmm.
Once I'd seen them, it was kind of okay. But I used to get myself really worked up, like the thought of seeing somebody for the first time.
Yeah.
And people obviously didn't know why she had died.
Yeah.
I didn't know why she had died.
Just that, like, looming elephant in the room.
Yeah. And then, and I'm sure you know this well, but, like, all the things that people say that, I mean, there's never the right thing to say.
Yeah.
But sometimes people do say things that really
just
do upset you.
Yeah.
And they don't mean it because they're just trying to be kind. But
they're just trying to fill the void.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's just better, I think, in times like that when there really are no words, it's just to say, I don't have the words. Yeah. I don't have the words. Yeah. I wish I did.
Yeah, exactly. There just are no words.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of plodded along through the summer, just, I guess, getting through the days mm-hmm. and trying to be strong and trying to, you know, live life still, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Function. I wouldn't say live life, but function.
Yeah. Survive.
Yeah. And then we finally heard from the hospital that they had the results back. So we arranged to have a Zoom call with them because of Corona. We couldn't actually have a meeting. Yeah. And they said they had the reason why August had died. Now, prior to this, I actually had pretty much worked out what had happened. I'd done so much research. I was down rabbit holes on the internet constantly. And I was obviously thinking of every possible outcome.
Mm-hmm.
But when I had gone in and I had said my waters had broken and they said they hadn't, I'd read actually in Elle's book that a water leak is possible. And if somebody has a water leak, it can be a sign of infection.
Yeah.
And I thought, I think I had a water leak and I think I had an infection.
Mm.
I phoned my doctor for my 6-week check and obviously they won't see you. And I said, I'm really desperate to be checked. And she said, why? I said, well, I've had a stillbirth. I think my daughter died from something that maybe I carried and has been undetected. So she said, oh, well, let me have a look at your test results and everything. And she had a look and she said, oh, well, on the 7th of June, you did actually have an infection called Group B strep. And I said, what
is that? Hearing those words,
My heart literally dropped. And I thought, because this was a good 6-8 weeks since everything had happened, and obviously we hadn't heard this from the hospital, so to hear it from a doctor was really quite worrying. And then obviously we did so much research and we basically pieced together what had happened, which was then confirmed at the post-mortem. So,
which is, like, it's not your job to do.
No,
it's not your job to do, to be piecing the puzzle.
It's really not. And communication is so key in things like this, because the reason the hospital didn't tell us is because they didn't want us to go away and Google things. Yeah. They wanted to sit down with us and go through it properly, which I understand.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, because I then did hear from the doctor that I had this, all we did was Google things.
Of course.
So we had 6 weeks of that.
Yeah.
So anyway, we had this confirmed that when my waters had broken, it was actually a tiny pinhole leak, which allowed the infection that I carried, mm-hmm. that we were unaware of, to seep in, and August died within the hour, which is just terrifying. And the most unjust thing about this whole situation is in the UK, women just aren't tested for this group B strep, yeah. even though probably 2 out of 5 women carry it.
Okay, yeah.
And it's not dangerous unless you're pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're given antibiotics if you're a carrier mm-hmm. for the birth, so that if yeah. the baby is exposed to it, that they can fight it off. But it is rare for babies to die from it in the womb. Mm-hmm. It's more of an infection that causes things like meningitis,
okay.
Pneumonia, cerebral palsy.
Okay.
And obviously children can then die from that.
From that later on.
Later on.
Yeah.
But
so could you explain for the listeners what is like strep B?
So Greek B, streptococcus, I think it's called, is a bacteria.
Okay.
So it's carried in women, and there's no rhyme or reason really. And
yeah.
it lives in you, but it doesn't, it's not always present.
Like so, activated yeah. almost, yeah.
So there's a lot of controversy over testing in the UK, because they could test you and you have it at mm-hmm. 36 weeks, but then when you go to give birth, you might not have it.
Yeah.
And then they're giving you antibiotics for no reason.
Right.
But they've done, the charity that we're working with, the Group B Strep Support, have done so much research and rallied research and projects into finding that actually giving a woman a dose of penicillin does not do them or the baby
yeah.
harm.
Mm-hmm.
And the Department of Health responded.
So that's the antibiotic, just yeah, penicillin.
Just penicillin. Yeah. It's on an IV drip that they give you.
Something so simple.
The test actually costs the NHS £11.
Right.
And if the worst thing is that antenatal care in the UK, they don't tell you about Group B strep because they won't give you a free test.
Right.
So they could tell you, but you would have to go and pay to have a private test done, which is about, I think, £35.
Mm.
And they don't want it to be something that you can only do if you can afford it.
Mm.
But I just don't think that's their place to decide.
Not at all.
Because I think if somebody heard our story, and I know for a fact this has happened...
Yeah.
That if they thought their baby was going to die, they would probably not buy those 2 little outfits from Next
and go and get that £35 antibiotic or test. Yeah.
And then they give you the antibiotics for labour. So we were so obviously devastated, but I guess it wasn't a huge shock because we'd kind of worked it out.
So what was going through your mind then? So then you found out it's down to strep B. What was... And knowing that it could have been prevented by a test and £11 antibiotic, what was going...
I think it was just pure anger.
Rage, yeah.
And I actually got really angry with the hospital on the phone, and I said, you know, okay, so what will happen now?
Yeah.
Now that this has happened and August has died...
What are you going to do about it?
What will you do differently so that this doesn't happen to anybody else? Mm-hmm. And they said, you know, unfortunately, nothing will change. I said, so how many women at the Royal Barks does this happen to? And they said, oh, you know, probably one a year. So at that point, Liam and I thought, that one person this year is me.
Yeah.
Next year, if they're not going to do something to prevent it, we need to do something to raise awareness, to get people tested.
Doesn't matter that it's just one. And at that...
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well... HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
must have felt really like ostracizing and really like
dismissive.
Because that is really one a year in Royal Berks. Why me?
Yeah.
Why me? It's not even like, you know, if they said two a year, you'd as awful as, you know, I'm not the only one who was neglected.
Yeah,
is the word, neglected.
Been just so let down by the government, I guess. And the thing is, at the Royal Berks, they share the view that we should be doing this, you know, but they are guided by the Department of Health and Social Care.
Yeah.
And later on, we've, I mean, obviously we've done a lot of awareness raising, but we were on BBC South and they people responded back that, to us. Yeah. And they said that they continue to, you know, do their best and that they still believe that giving women antibiotics unnecessarily does more harm than good. And that just enraged me because I thought, what can be more harm than your baby dying?
Yeah.
If they had tested me and if they'd given me antibiotics, August would be sat here now and we wouldn't be having this conversation.
We wouldn't be meeting. Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess it's a lot of anger and a lot of we need to change this.
Yeah. Okay, so that goes perfect into all the work that you've been doing. So I guess this sort of goes into, I don't even want to really say this, like, do you think anything positive has come out of it? Because
we have to look at it that
I believe there are some things you've done that are completely positive.
We have to believe that we have made the best of the worst situation that could happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our hearts will never forget August and never get over the fact that she's gone. But what we have done through this is prevented other babies dying.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all quite organic the way it happened. We
just quickly, can I ask why August? Such a lovely name.
It's Liam's choice, actually. Obviously, she wasn't born in August or anything, but we had just always loved the name. He came up with it and we just always loved it. I think it's just like positive and happy and summery.
It's a great month, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we just always thought it fitted.
Yeah. Love that. Go on, carry on. I was like, I want to ask why August, because I love it.
Yeah, we love it too. But I guess the way everything kind of came about was, it was actually before we'd spoken to us and we had everything confirmed.
Mm-hmm.
It was a few days after we had buried August and we were sat at home just watching TV, like, you know, numb, I guess, not really knowing what's going on. And I suppose Liam and I reacted very differently. He was very strong and silent and going to work and, you know, just trying to get on with things and look after me. And I just wanted to talk and cry and look at pictures of her. And we were just not clashing, but I guess finding it difficult to grieve together because we were grieving so differently. And I think it got to a bit of a head and I just said to him, like, you need to talk because I don't know what's going on in your head. Anyway, I went up to bed and we'd been watching this programme, I May Destroy You. I don't know if you saw it. It was on BBC of the summer. And it was the first thing that we'd actually been able to, like, properly engage in. Because it was quite gritty. But we loved the soundtrack. And
Great soundtrack.
Yeah, Liam Shazam'd a lot of the songs. And anyway, he heard one song on the programme that night when I'd said to him, you know, I think you really, really need to just try and talk a bit. And it just kind of resonated and it was called About Her. And he looked it up and it was a French producer and we'd never heard of it. It was quite old. I went to bed and he was like, I'll be up in a bit. Anyway, he didn't come to bed. And in the morning, I was like, well, how are you? And he said, I've written a song to that song. I've, like, written a track to that song. I was like, okay. Anyway, he went off to the studio the next day because his friend has a studio and they recorded it. And he came back and he said, oh, do you want to hear it? And I was like, okay, like, literally no idea what this is going to be like.
Yeah.
I mean, he used to do music, like, at youth club when we were at school. So it's been a long, long time since he's done anything like that. But anyway, I put these...
You're thinking, is he going to bring, like, a funky beat? Like, I don't know if that's a vibe.
What is it? But anyway, I listened to it and literally the first line of the song, I just started crying. My heart just, like, broke. But it was amazing and it was... The words, just everything he said in the song was everything I was feeling, but he couldn't say. And I said to him, this is amazing. And he was like, oh, do you think? And I said, like, you need to share that with people. And he's like, no, I just wrote it for you. And I said, you really, really need to share it. So anyway, I persuaded him to just send it to a few friends and family. And then
it kind of just spiraled, really. Mm-hmm. And then I've got a friend who works at One Extra, and I sent it to her and I said, oh, you know, what do you think? Like, is this good? And she's like, you need to come on the show.
Yeah.
So we went on the Mr. Jam show and we told our story and he played the song. And then Liam spoke afterwards. And we just had such an overwhelming response from people who hadn't lost and people who had lost. Mm. And
that's why I think what is so fantastic about it is that you managed to touch people that haven't lost.
Yeah.
And to paint a picture for them.
Yeah.
To show an insight of to what this life is like.
Yeah.
And there's something incredibly powerful about that.
Yeah, I think so. It's really hit a few demographics. And like, I still don't think to this day Liam knows how powerful this has been for people, because
I found you that way.
Yeah, exactly.
I found you that way through someone shared on their story. And I saw, it was a picture of the bench, him, the buggy.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's a really different picture.
Yeah.
And it's what was an IGTV I listened to, and I was like, oh my gosh, I just followed you from then.
That's amazing. Yeah. Power of social media.
Yeah. But when it works, it works.
It does, yeah. But we had so many people reach out to our, because I've got an account for August, after that, saying they had to pull over on the motorway because they were just in tears. Mr. Jam was getting texts like real time whilst the song was playing. People were just like, I'm overwhelmed. And I guess people were like, how have they managed to do this in like the depths of grief? Like, Liam filmed the video, his whole idea was the bench and the empty buggy. And so it was kind of anonymous, but shows that everybody can experience loss, you know, however.
Yeah.
And isn't that apparent now when you see Chrissy Teigen and John Legend? You know, it doesn't matter if you're multimillionaires, this can still happen to you. And from then, things just started spiraling, really. At that point, we then, when we'd gone on the Mr. Jam show, by then we did actually know that August had passed away from strep B.
Yeah,
but
confirmed.
At the time of filming the video, we didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a little slot on the Mr. Jam show to talk about Group B strep. Mm-hmm. And from then, we just had a lot of people contact us. So the BBC got in touch. So we did a long interview on BBC Berkshire where we kind of told our story fully, and
I'll link all of this, by the way, guys, so you can all see, don't worry.
And then BBC South got in touch, so we actually filmed our story. And I guess from that, we've just had so many people reach out to us, and it's been amazing to hear, like, pregnant women have come to me and said, I'm pregnant, I saw your story, I went and got tested, I'm positive, I've planned to have antibiotics for my birth now, without you, like, I wouldn't have thought about it. Yeah, I don't know what would have happened, and then these babies have been born, and, you know, we've had people reach out to us from the Caribbean, from Los Angeles, from Australia. It's really gone quite worldwide, and people have heard our story, heard about Group B strep, and I guess most importantly for us is heard about our daughter.
Just what I was about to say.
Because when somebody dies, I think you're so terrified, especially when it's a baby, that people will just forget. And one of the lines in Liam's song actually is like, the world keeps turning but I failed to rotate. And that is how you feel, I think, when somebody close to you dies. Like, everybody else gets on with their life, but you just can't.
You're standing still
and you see people move on, and it's hard to see everyone else kind of. You want everyone to be happy, but at the same time, you can't relate to that happiness because you're not there.
That's not me right now.
Yeah. So it's been a horrendous journey, but I think we have made the absolute best of it that we can. And I think we've touched a lot, not only just the baby loss world, but also male grief, because I think it's very unspoken. And, you know, we've had so many men reach out to us, or women who said, my husband listened to that song and he's never heard anything like that before. We lost a baby 10 years ago and he's never been able to speak about it. And, you know,
and now he is.
Kind of opening that conversation up, which has been amazing. So I guess the fact that we're helping other people gives us comfort. And within 2 weeks, we'd raised £10,000 for the Group B strep support.
Yeah, all the money you've raised.
Which is, I mean, it's still ticking up as well. And we just have to thank all our friends and family and anonymous donators and people that don't even know us that have heard our story and donated, because it means so much to us. And we're obviously getting really involved with the charity now about, you know, any other awareness things we can do. But, yeah, it's been... it's been a crazy, crazy journey. But I guess all I can say is that August has a legacy and she will never be forgotten because she's saved so many people's lives.
Exactly. And saved so many babies. Like, I can't imagine what like a feeling that is of having, you know, like pregnant women come to you and say, you know, your story has gone out and made me get tested.
Mm.
Is it quite bittersweet? Because you kind of think, do you know what? I wish someone else did this for me.
We have had moments where we felt that, like, we are delighted we're doing that for people.
Yeah.
But I remember seeing on Facebook a video of this morning 2 years ago from a couple that went through the same thing as us.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought, why didn't I see that?
Mm.
You know, this is, if I had just seen that video, I just would have gone and paid 35 quid for a test and things would be so different. So I guess we do have our moments where it's frustrating that we didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I suppose you just have to think positively and think we've helped so many others.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's nothing wrong, I don't think, either in... I commend you for having such a positive outlook still. And it kind of goes
some
into,
days it's not like
I was
that.
To say, yeah, yeah. The next question would sort of be, yeah, what's your outlook on life now?
Mm.
You say you put a positive spin, but...
I would say every day is, like, really up and down. Liam's much stronger than me. He goes out to work every day.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't been able to go back to work yet. Some days I can't even see family. I just don't feel like it.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time I'm okay. But I do have my really, really bad days. I'd say my outlook on life now is only when you've experienced rock bottom can you look at things with such a different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
My outlook on life is so different now. I think I used to worry about so many stupid things. I used to worry about work and worry about nonsense. And actually, the only thing that's important in life is your health.
Yeah.
Your family,
mm-hmm.
your friends.
Mm-hmm.
And when you lose a baby or you lose anyone, but I think particularly when you're so excited to have a baby and then it gets so snatched away from you realise how much you take for granted in life.
The fragility, isn't
it?
Yeah.
And so I would say just forget the small things. Mm-hmm. Like, we're so lucky and so blessed, and even though we've been through all of this, we still see ourselves as, you know, very, very grateful and blessed for the people we have around us and the fact that we had August and we met her and, you know, she's our daughter and she always will be our daughter. But I guess just don't sweat the small stuff. It's so much in life is so insignificant.
Yeah.
And it's not people's fault, but I see, you know, people moaning about being up all night with their babies or their babies misbehaving or kids being difficult. And I think, what I would give to be up all night with my baby. And it's not people's fault, you know.
Of course not.
Everybody has ups and downs.
Yeah.
But I just feel like I've never... They do say that losing a baby is one of the worst things you can ever go through.
Yeah.
And I guess once you've experienced horrible loss, everything else seems so insignificant.
Everything pales in comparison,
it does.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
I sort of said that. I wrote a post on it not long ago and I put... It was after I'd lost my job.
And
I woke up in the morning and I got the email, oh, you lost your job, made redundant. And I literally looked and I went, oh, shame about the concessions, firstly.
The discount.
Yeah, the discount. But then I was like, do you know what? I've been through worse.
Yeah.
I've been through worse.
That's what I say every time something happens.
When somebody just goes, you go, oh,
I know.
Been through worse.
Yeah.
I'll be all right with this.
The other day, I went home and I had like loads of parking tickets. And I looked at them and it was my car, but it was in London. And I haven't even left Reading, like, let alone go to London.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's weird. And it had pictures. So I was like,
I know we haven't been
car in London.
Yeah.
Anyway, it turns out that my car's been cloned.
And stop.
I know. My number plate's been cloned. So I think today, when we went on holiday last week, I had 8 parking tickets that week.
Jesus Christ.
So I've had speeding fines, I've had bus lane contraventions, and I think normally I'd be getting myself so worked up about this.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm having to, my dad, bless him, is appealing everyone for me, and I've gone to the police, I've gone to the DVLA, and my dad actually got pulled over in my car the other day, so they know that...
Yeah, something's going on, yeah.
Yeah. But normally I think I'd be getting myself so worked up about something like that,
yeah.
But every time I think about it, I'm like, do you know what? It actually pales into insignificance.
Yeah.
Okay, I've got to do a bit of admin with tickets and it's annoying. But actually, like, who cares?
Yeah.
I don't really care.
Yeah, I'm still here. Yeah. I'm okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's weird. I think people who haven't been through a loss, I think they might think we don't, like, feel like other, like, yeah. Obviously, yeah, nothing pales to it. Obviously, those things still annoy us, yeah, or upset us and aggravate us. But
you're not really shocked anymore. I'm not stuff.
You've experienced one of the most traumatic and shocking things. Mm. You're like, try and one up that, hun.
Yeah.
Like, try and one up,
yeah,
that. Nothing,
exactly.
Nothing will.
No.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, a lot of people, I can imagine, like, both our lives, maybe a bit like, oh, like, does nothing faze you anymore?
Yeah.
It's a bit like,
not really.
No, not really.
I know.
And I used to think that was quite a negative thing with me. I kind of thought I was a bit shut off, but then I was like, no, I actually think it's possibly one of my greatest traits now.
And I think that's a big thing that comes from loss, and my friends have really tried to hammer this home to me. I think when you lose a baby, your confidence really goes. Like, when you have a baby, I think your confidence quite goes anyway, from what my friends tell me. But when you lose it and you feel like you weren't able to carry the baby, and it's silly, and people tell me, like, I know it's not logical, but sometimes,
but
as a woman,
feel.
That's how you feel. I can't remember why I was even going with that. But I think basically, when you have given birth to a child that you know is not going to be alive, anything else, I think, well, it can't be as bad as that.
That, yeah. So I've been through the trenches.
And my friend said to me, you've come out of this like a different person. To me, I don't feel confident. But to them, they're like, you're like this strong woman. Mm. Like, I don't feel like I could get what you've gone through. You've done all this and you've still fundraised and tried to be positive and turn it into something for other people.
Mm.
And I suppose, like, maybe that is something good that's come out of it, is I'll never be the same. I'll always be different. Mm-hmm. But maybe my difference a bit better. Bit stronger.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Not so worrying and anxious and...
Yeah, yeah. I used to, yeah, think like that sort of too. I didn't sort of realise how much I'd changed, sort of really, until I started Grief Gang. And I kind of looked back at previous me. And I wrote a letter to my younger self.
Did you?
Which I found really, really therapeutic. And I'd strongly advise anyone to do it.
Mm.
And I kind of just went through the timeline of everything I've been through. And I kind of looked back and I was like, I've changed. I was like, do you know what? I like the new me a lot better.
Yeah.
I like the new empathetic me, the more helpful me.
Yeah.
The not so angry at the fucking world me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, hindsight is a beautiful thing.
It really is. Mm. And I think I beat myself up quite a lot in the beginning because I actually didn't really like being pregnant. And I think that's quite a hard thing to admit. But I found it really hard. I was quite poorly in the beginning. I was quite sick. And I was travelling into London 2 hours each day, each day. And that, when you've got morning sickness, is pretty tough.
Yeah.
And, you know, my job's quite high pressure, high stress. And I worked right up until the end. And I just didn't particularly enjoy the experience. And then I felt so horribly guilty afterwards because I thought, I should have treasured every moment. Who cares that I felt like a whale? Who cares that my face blew up like a balloon? Like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And I think that's another thing, that I've always been, like, quite weight conscious and, you know, quite hard on myself. And I look at myself now and I think, why did you ever care about that?
Yeah.
The most important thing is that you're healthy.
Yeah.
And, like...
And you're here and you're kicking and you're thriving.
Yeah. So I think that's another thing that I've really changed my outlook on, is, like, health is the most important thing.
Yeah,
health
absolutely.
And your family.
Yeah, absolutely love that. One more question before the last one. I don't think I sent it to you, but what is a misconception of baby loss that you would like to break? Like,
there's quite a few, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think people, there's a lot of things that people say to you when you have a baby, when you have baby loss, and they think that they're being helpful. And, you know, people are so lovely and they just want to help you, and it's never said in malice. But I think people say things like, well, at least you can get pregnant.
Yeah.
I mean, that's so irrelevant. When you are in the throes of grief and you've lost literally a part of you, that's not helpful.
No. Yeah.
And the other thing that people say a lot is, and why people think that it's okay to just come out with things like this.
Brazen, isn't it?
Yeah. Like,
and you're like, oh.
Yeah. They're like, oh, you're trying again.
Oh God, I knew you were gonna say that.
It's such an inappropriate question.
Like
I
she's
think.
Just replaceable. Yeah. And just have another one.
Just have another
and
one.
That's
or like, people say, and I've never had this, and I think it's because August, when she came, she was a fully grown, beautiful baby. Mm. But I think a lot of my people I've met through the baby loss world say that people will say it just wasn't meant to be when they have a miscarriage or, you know, they have a loss. Mm. And that's not helpful.
No, no.
That's dismissing how you feel and dismissing that you were pregnant. And
yeah.
As soon as you take a pregnancy test, you imagine your whole life. And then it gets, like, snatched away from you. Mm-hmm. And you just feel like some days you just don't know how you're going to function, because how can you get on with life when that's how you feel?
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, probably a bit of a misconception that if you have another baby, you'll be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, with grief, whether it's a baby, whether it's like you with your mum, like it never leaves you.
Mm.
We went on holiday. It was lovely. Still thought about August every day.
Of course, yeah.
You can't just forget it and move on.
No. And I think there's something quite beautiful in that. Because if you were able to just forget and move on, what did they mean?
Yeah.
They didn't mean anything. To go a lifetime forever thinking about them and them weighing so heavy on your soul, regardless if she was here, you know, for how long she was, regardless if my mum was here for 19 years of my life, for them to still have such an impact on our lives, regardless of being here or not, I think is truly beautiful.
It is. And Liam always says that. He always says, you know, that little girl.
The sun just came beaming in there.
It did.
That was
nice. He always says, you know, that little girl is so blessed, like, she doesn't even realise everything that she's done for the world and for us, and she'll just always be remembered. And you're right, like, there is something beautiful in that they will always be with you.
Yeah. Definitely.
You have to look at it as a positive thing, I guess, that you can't just forget and move on.
Yeah, absolutely. Alrighty, our last question is my favourite one. If you could tell your past self one bit of truthful and honest advice for this grief journey you're about to endure, what would it be?
It sounds so cliche, because when people used to say it to me when this first happened, I used to be like, whatever.
Yeah, like, piss off.
Literally. I just don't want to hear it. But I've met a lot of people through the charities and, you know, Sands and Tommy's, who've been amazing. Mm-hmm. And they said, you won't feel it now, but I promise you, it will get easier.
Mm-hmm.
And I never thought it would get easier. Yeah. Some days it's still really hard, but some days it is easier.
Mm-hmm.
My outbursts of tears are less.
Mm-hmm.
I can go food shopping now. Mm-hmm. I can go into town.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I don't feel like it,
yeah,
but I can do it. Whereas in the beginning I was so low functioning.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought, there's no way this will ever get easier. So I think
small wins, isn't
small wins, and it does get easier, because it only can get easier. It can't get harder than that. It just can't. And I think when the shock begins to lessen, that's when you begin to feel slightly better.
Yeah,
it'll never go away, as we said.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think the thing I would say is, I know it doesn't feel like it, but it does get easier.
Amazing. Oh, these are done.
It's been emotional.
Oh my God. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm a bit flabbergasted, because I feel like, oh, I'm kind of held it together a little bit. But I'm like, oh God.
We did have some tears
we
together.
We did, but you know what? That's the reality of it. Thank you so much
for
this. Like I said in the beginning, there's no one who I thought I would have wanted to have opened the door to baby loss with other than yourself. And the work you have done, you and Liam continue to do in the name of beautiful, beautiful baby August, is inspiring.
Thank you.
I'm going to go for us like crying again. So Grief Gang, I hope you've enjoyed listening to this. You've probably been crying with us as we've cried too. Please do. I'm trying to, there's so many things I want to tag, but I will put them all in the post on Instagram. But please do follow Louisa and her amazing journey over at It's All About August on Instagram. And I will link Liam's music video and your BBC interview as well, because it needs to be seen. So take care. Lots of love. Grief Gang over and out. Bye.
Bye.
Well, that's it for this week's episode. I hope you all enjoyed it and it set your week off to a great start. Whether you've laughed a little, cried a little, I mean, I think crying is good for the soul, or you've resonated with something that was said, thank you for listening and spending time out of your day to do so. If you like what you hear, please do rate, review and subscribe. In doing so, you're ensuring that lots more people get to find the Grief Gang podcast and hopefully help them too. If you're not already, check out the Grief Gang on social media platforms such as Instagram, Twitter and Facebook. I'm most active on the Instagram page where I love, love, love to connect with you all. For now, take care and big, big love.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.